Great to be here at Berkeley Zen Center, and congratulations to Linda on being the new abbot of Berkeley Zen Center. So tomorrow is the memorial or funeral or whatever of Hosan Allen Sanocki, old friend. So I want to talk about. So I'm going to start by talking about Hosan. We were students together at Columbia University in 1968. We were among 700 others who were arrested together after occupying the buildings. We were in different buildings, but we were arrested together. And there was a demonstration against the Vietnam War and against racism, and a long time ago. this was a couple of weeks after Dr. King was killed. And Allen became a very great scholar of Dr. Martin Luther King and his work and looking at it from a Buddhist perspective. In 2003, Allen and I were arrested together again. We were Zen priests by then, at the federal building in San Francisco, protesting the invasion of Iraq, which happened even though there were hundreds of thousands of people protesting it beforehand around the world. So I got to know Allen better in the fall of 1968. He was in a band that rehearsed in the apartment I shared with four other Columbia students, including the leader of the band. And we hung out together. The apartment looked out over Harlem, so we would hang out and watch the fires, and we tripped up together a lot. Allen and that band moved to Woodstock in 1969, and I visited them a few times. And Allen continued making music, as you all know. He was a solo artist and was in various bluegrass groups. He did a couple of CDs, Everything is Broken and Wooden Man later on. So Allen and I got to know each other better again in 1985. I was head do-on for the summer. I'd been at Tassajara for a couple of years. And in amongst the new guest students coming in was the name Allen Sanocki, and of course there couldn't be two of them. So we reconnected. He'd been practicing here at the Berkeley Zen Center while I'd been at Tassajara. Later we collaborated and consulted about Buddhist teaching and activism, Buddhist activism. So for example, in 2006, Allen joined in an anti-torture vigil and teaching at Berkeley Law School. John Yu, who had written the torture memos, was teaching there, and I think is still teaching there, alas. Anyway, so Allen spoke a few times at these vigils and was there in support a lot. And then at the end of that year, in beginning of 2007, I relocated to Chicago, to Ancient Dragon Zen Gate, where I'd been traveling to for a few years. And Alan actually spoke at Ancient Dragon Zen Gate 14 times from 2009 to 2023. He also performed musically occasionally. So we consulted together about our sanghas, about his being assistant abbot, vice abbot at Berkeley Zen Center, about issues I had at Ancient Dragon Zen Gate. And, you know, we were friends. It was good. Hosan was part of many different communities. Of course, here at Berkeley Zen Center, but also he was involved in music with various groups. He traveled widely. He was in Burma many times, helping Buddhists who were protesting the military dictatorship there. And then later on, he was helping, supporting the Rohingya Muslims who are being persecuted still by the Burmese government and Burmese Buddhists. So Alan did a lot. He was really energetic. He was really, you know, out there. He went to India where he helped Dalit Buddhists, and he became a scholar of Ambedkar, who was the founder of the Dalit Untouchable Buddhists. And the spreading of Buddhism again in India. He traveled to Japan and Germany, and he was just very energetic in his Dharma work. And he worked with engaged Buddhist groups around the world. He produced a few books, Heirs to Ambedkar, Bodhisattva Embrace, and then Turning Words, which is a wonderful book that it takes phrases, words, turning words from different American Zen teachers, and actually international Buddhist teachers, and phrases that actually impacted Alan. So it's a very personal book, but it's really good. Want to say more about Alan, but I don't know. It's difficult. There's a funeral tomorrow at Freight and Salvage, and I'll be there. And I don't know if Lori's here. But, oh, hi. Yeah, Lori was at Tassajara too back then. She was Tenzo, I think, around the time that Alan came. Lori and I go back a long ways too. Alan was just Alan. He was really, he understood a lot. He was savvy about a lot. He told me that once that I was like an Old Testament prophet, because I even from the Dharma Seed, as I'm going to now, spoke about political things. Politics is just another way of being involved with Bodhisattva work. So So we're living in horrible times. We know that. We all know that. There's a horrible genocide going on in Gaza and the West Bank. It's an American genocide. We're supplying the arms. I mean, the Israeli government is, and the Israeli defense forces are involved, but it's really an American as well as an Israeli genocide, supported by our tax dollars. And it's kind of bipartisan, although it's starting to shift, just barely starting to shift, after mass slaughter of children and starvation now. It's just horrible. What to do? What to do? And the people who, as college students and many others of us who are advocating for opposing Israel's policies, are stamped as anti-Semitic. And it's just not true. Like Alan, I was raised Jewish. I was bar mitzvahed at Tree of Life Synagogue in Pittsburgh, a few blocks from where I grew up, which was the site of a massacre in 2018. So there's real anti-Semitism, but opposing the government of Israel is not. And so never again, this the phrase from the Holocaust applies, not just to Jewish people, it applies to anyone. So anyway, I'm going to give a litany of some of the horrible things that are happening. Immigrants are being deported without due process. I don't know if it's dangerous, if ICE raids are up here in San Francisco now. They are certainly in Los Angeles, and people are being rounded up and deported because of their skin color, because they're Latino. Healthcare is under attack. Women are under attack. Women's healthcare, particularly, but women in general. There was a Republican state legislator who has advocated that women not be allowed to vote anymore. And so, horrible things are happening under this billionaire regime. There's an end to the Department of Education. There's an end to climate science. So the Environmental Protection Agency is being decimated with the slogan "Drill, baby, drill." And Columbia University, where Alan and I were arrested, is now very much involved in supporting the Trump regime and attacking students who are protesting. So, amongst other things, today is the 80th anniversary of the Nagasaki bombing. So nuclear danger, it remains, and is expanding. The bombing at Nagasaki, 3 days after the Hiroshima bombing, was really unnecessary. I mean, the Hiroshima bombing too. The Japanese were about to surrender, were trying to surrender. I think President Truman went to okay the bombing of Hiroshima because of, well, to warn Russia. So it's complicated. But certainly the Nagasaki bombing was extra. Even if the Hiroshima bombing was ostensibly to end the war quickly, I saw something that President Truman didn't even know there was going to be a bombing at Nagasaki. I don't know. Anyway, there's various various information about that. So, you know, what do we do? How do we respond to all of this? Despair, despondency is not helpful. We can all feel that given the state of things in our country now, but it's not helpful. What is helpful is paying attention, looking at alternative news sources. The news media is kind of going along with Trump, or it's varied. Anyway, we all know this. We know about this. I'm speaking about this in Berkeley is like bringing coals to Newcastle. But even in Chicago, we know this. You know, it's terrible. And what do we do? So, and what would Alan do? What would Hozan do? Hozan was really, I don't know how much he spoke about all this when he was at the Abbot here. I think he, you know, was trying to be moderate, but he knew about this, and what would Alan do? And networking and informing each other about this is important. I watch Democracy Now! Every morning. Just one good news source, but there's lots of others. But they're all alternative news sources. But I want to kind of close with talking about Huayan Buddhism. So, Huayan Buddhism is a Chinese school of Buddhism that was an offshoot of the Avatamsaka Sutra, the Flower Ornament Sutra, which is called Huayan in Chinese, Kagon in Japanese. And it's very, this branch of Buddhism is, institutionally, it didn't last very long. There were five main abbots or patriarchs of the Huayan school, but Dongshan, who is considered the founder of Soto Zen, actually can be considered the sixth Huayan patriarch. Dongshan, well, there was the Sando Kai before Dongshan, Shuto, 707 to 790, and then Dongshan came up with the 5 degrees. So this is about seeing the phenomenal world, the world of particulars, the world of all of the things that are happening, and now, but also balanced by seeing the ultimate reality of wholeness, which we taste, at least in our zazen. So, you know, there's this dance between the ultimate reality, universal ultimate reality, and the particular phenomenon that that includes the billionaires and all of the things that are happening now. But the fundamental truth is that we are all connected. We're all connected. We are all particular, but also part of one body. And not just people, Republicans and Democrats and independents, but also the trees and the flowers and the birds and even the rocks and mountains. And so Soto Zen is very much follows Huayan. Huayan Buddhism is actually, there was a recent academic conference where there were scholars from East Asian Buddhism, from all the different traditions of East Asian Buddhism. And they all agreed that Huayan Buddhism was fundamental to all of them. Even, you know, Jodo Shinshu and Nichiren and, you know, all of the different branches of Japanese Buddhism and East Asian Buddhism and Korean Buddhism. Korea was very much influenced by Huayan. So this balance, this, you know, Suki Roshi talked about losing our balance against the background of perfect balance. This balance of the universal and the particular. So we're all connected, and we're also connected in time. So, you know, Dongshan lived in this in the 700s and 800s. Dogen lived in the 1200s. Suzuki Roshi lived in the 1960s, up to 1971. And so in time, things change. So how are we going to take care of the world after Trump? After and there's tremendous damage being done now. I mean, it just it's and it's going to be a long haul. But we don't know how things will work out. We don't know. There's a great Zen koan about how not knowing is most intimate, not knowing is nearest. We don't know the results of all of this. We don't know how it's going to be. But we know that there is help and hope for the world. But we have to do it. It's up to us. It's up to us to pay attention to all the things that are happening, to respond as best we can, to go to demonstrations or sign petitions online or whatever, to resist. So all the terrible things that are happening, the climate damage and the climate storms and wildfires and hurricanes, and you know it's all exacerbated by climate, and now you know Trump's slogan is "Drill, baby, drill." So how do we? How is this going to shift? We know it will shift in time. We know that the world will continue. The world will continue. Maybe with far less humans, or fewer humans. Maybe we will, in the next election, change the House or the Senate so that there is an opposition to Trump. Anyway, we don't know. And not knowing is a great help for us. We can overcome our despair. The despair isn't necessary. There's damage being done, there are people being harmed. It's really horrible. But how do we keep a positive outlook? How do we respond? These are dark times, and yet we are losing our balance against the background of perfect balance. So, thinking of Alan Hosan and how he would be responding to this towards the end of his life when we spoke, he didn't know. He just didn't know. And he knew that these things were coming. But Zen has a long time space. We think about Shakyamuni Buddha, 1500, wait, 500 BC, more or less. We talk about sixth ancestor and Dongshan and Hongzhe and Dogen, and their world was so much different. Dogen did not have electric lights. And we don't have video recordings of his talks. Actually, he had Jishas and Anjas who recorded a lot of his talks. So he left Shobogenzo and Eikoroku, and so we have a lot of his perspective. So thinking about but Dogen was what, 800 years ago? Is that right? 800, 900, yeah. So what's the world going to be like in 800 years? We don't know. Will Soto Zen still continue? Will people walking by the Berkeley Zen Center still have a place to go? Just in 100 years, in 200 years, 300 years, we have to think in terms of a long, long time span. And it's up to us right now to do what we can do. So our ancestors of the future are looking back at us, wishing us well. So I think there's still a lot of time for questions and answers and discussion, and I'm interested in hearing from people online and from people here in the room. Any comments, questions, responses? So please feel free.
Tiger Roshi, thank you very much for your talk.
Hi, Greg.
When I think about your activism, which has been ongoing for as long as I've been aware of your existence, I think the thing that I've heard you speak about the most, and the posting on the AZTA and SCBA listservs the most, is climate. Is the climate crisis.
Right.
Because I think that it's just fundamental to everything.
Yes, it
And
is.
I feel like I want to play Old Testament prophet myself right now. They say nature bats last. Right now, the fires in Canada, so much of Canada is on fire right now that they can smell the smoke in Europe. This is not getting better. It is getting worse.
Yes.
And I feel that all the human antics, all this nonsense that's going on that's causing so much pain and suffering is going to be eclipsed by the climate crisis, which is just getting worse to the point where we humans are just going to be struggling to stay alive, struggling to merely exist. And that's going to level everything. That's what I think. I'm very extremely sad about war and political nonsense and needless suffering, genocide, all of it. And I just feel like real quick, quicker than we know, it's going to become like, oh yeah, remember that? Remember when that mattered? Yeah.
Yes, I think that's right. And the climate situation is bad. It's not something, I don't know about tipping points and, you know, I read various things and, but I think there is, as bad as it may be, and it may be that the planet will survive. Human beings may not. But also human beings are resilient and adaptable, and whatever is coming, I think at some point people are going to wake up. I mean, well, lots of people have woke up already about this. But I don't have any answers, but I know it's critical, and we need to keep paying attention to it, and alternative technologies, I don't know. In many places in Europe, for example, there is solar power and geothermal and wind power that is sustaining much, if not most, of the energy needs. So there are countries where that's happening. We have the technology, actually. There may be various fixes that are needed. We have the technology. We just don't have the political will, at least in this country. And it's gonna be bad. But there's so many things that can go wrong, and the nuclear danger is really serious too. This is a terrible time. However, there's an old story that bodhisattvas from many, many different realms, different solar systems, different, I don't know what, different dimensions, are all lined up waiting to be born here because they know that this is the place where they're most needed. So, you know, the Lotus Sutra has this, that wonderful chapter about the bodhisattvas emerging from the earth. And yes, so there will be help. So we have to keep paying attention, keep looking at climate, keep looking at nuclear danger, keep looking at the ice agents, horrible, horrible stuff. So I don't know, but I share your concerns. Thank you, Greg.
Ken and Katie have a comment online.
Yes. Who I can't really see who's online, but Please. Yes, who is this?
I'm sorry, not me. I don't know why it went to me. Just
Okay.
I'll start. Thank you so much for your talk. There we go.
And who are you? I'm sorry.
I'm Kate. I've been practicing at BZC since 2009, something like that.
Thank you.
And I'm part of a small group of folks from BZC who are, in our group, we're focusing on activism and organizing and the action side of things, but grounded in Dharma and practice. We call ourselves Zen Action and Practice because it abbreviates to ZAP. But I really appreciated how in your talk you didn't separate Dharma from activism and organizing. And I'm thinking, for example, of what you were saying about don't know mind as an antidote to despair.
Right.
And I'm just wondering if you have any further words or resources to point us, those of us who are kind of more on the organizing activist side of things.
Yes, what else? Well, I was gonna mention, Alan and I started working on a book back before the pandemic. We were collaborating on a book about social engagement in the old Buddhist teaching. So I have his notes. I'm hopeful maybe I can start to put together that book from notes that we both have. So that's just, that Buddhism has, engaged Buddhism is not something new. Buddhism has always been engaged. Shakyamuni sat by the riverside when an army was coming and stopped an invasion. Of course, later they came again. And, oh well, but so we were going to, and I hope maybe I can put together all of the notes that Alan took about different engaged Buddhist texts. So this is just looking at parts of primary texts and little introductions. Anyway, so that's just a kind of besides from your question. But how do we take care of our planet? So I don't know that I have. Well, okay, Gary Snyder talked about Zen being about Zazen and cleaning the temple. And the boundaries of the temple can be as wide as as the world, if you want. So we have to see that we can be cleaning the temple. And what to do right now, demonstrations actually make a difference. This is story. So I got to know Dan Ellsberg when I was doing the anti-torture vigil, and he told me a story that, and he verified this, he said this was true, that President Nixon was sitting in the Oval Office one day with Henry Kissinger, and he decided to drop nuclear bombs on Hanoi. He decided that's what we're going to do. But then he looked out the window, and there were hundreds of thousands of people protesting. And he thought, maybe I shouldn't do that right now. And he didn't. Those people went home and they may have thought that it didn't make any difference. I think the news reports said that Nixon was watching a football game that day. Didn't know about the demonstrations. But actually, the demonstrators stopped a nuclear attack. So we don't know. We don't know what to do. But all of the different things, sanctuaries, sanctuary cities for Latino people, Hispanic people, trying to identify, you know, the ICE operatives. Anyway, there are things to be done. Speaking for the climate. So there are things to be done.
Yeah. Thank you. And thank you for bringing so much of Hozon forward today.
Other comments, questions?
Welcome. And I encourage you to do that book. I would look forward to doing that. Quickly, what would Dogen do? Because he like basically was run out of town. And also Hozon told a story often about where they were gonna do the sit-in, but the students of color, specifically the African-American students were like, that is cool for you, but it's a little dangerous for us.
Right.
Perhaps you want to give your interpretation of that. Again, thank you.
Yeah, well, okay, two questions. What would Dogen do, but, which I'll come back to, but what happened in Colombia was that we took over the main college teaching building and stayed there overnight. And then the black students asked us to leave in the morning because we were... White students were undisciplined, were unruly, were making a mess. And the black students said, go take over other buildings. So we did. I was one of the people who broke into Low Library where Alan was arrested that morning. And anyway.
Did you have a feeling about that? Like
we had a feeling that the war in Vietnam was terrible and we had to do something. And Dr. King had just been killed, and Columbia was built a gym which was in Morningside Heights, and taking away place for black people, and expanding. But yeah, it was actually the black people, the blacks in Hamilton Hall, who really made that event happen. We didn't really know it till 40 years later. There was a kind of a memorial or we got together at Columbia and found out about this. That's the story that Alan tells, I'm sure. And what would Dogen do? Well, Dogen lived in a totally different time. There was not even the pretense of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness or equal justice under the law or anything like that. It was a feudal society. So the question is wrong. What would Dogen do? Well, Dogen was committed to Zazen. Dogen was committed to seeing that all being, the rocks and the birds and the trees and, you know, all being was alive. All objects were alive. The world was alive. So how do we see that now? How do we see that? And this goes to the climate question too. How do we see that mountains and rocks are alive? That trees are alive? We know now that there are these fungal, mycorrhizal, whatever networks underneath forests where trees can respond to other trees and warn them of dangers and share nutrition. And so, what would Dogen do? Thank you for that question. Yes.
Thank you for being here.
It's a pleasure.
What would Dogen do? I think it goes back to watering beneficial seeds. That's what we can do. We water the beneficial seeds and pay attention to what works.
Yeah.
And work for that. What's effective? What reaches you? There's endless myriad places to start. What calls to you? I think that's, I want to encourage people to do that.
Yes, and yes, thank you. Yes, and each of us can take on some issue, some context, and work at it, and work with organizations that are doing good things. Work with the ACLU, or work with Greenpeace, or work with, you know, find an organization that's doing things that you agree with, and support them in whatever way you can. Yes, back there. Is that Alex?
Yeah.
Hi.
Hi, nice to see you. Thanks so much for calling in. My whole family really appreciates it. I don't have a question, but I wanted to say that you've been on my mind because a couple months ago, we had a practice period in which we studied the Lotus Sutra, and I took a class with you at Institute for Buddhist Studies about the Lotus Sutra. So
yes.
I just wanted to thank you for opening that text for me and for many people around the world with your work.
Thank you.
And to say Gambate, please continue to do that work.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And thank you, Alex, for all your work.
There's a question online.
Okay. And then Andrea has a question, but go ahead. Who is this?
My name is Lynn McMichael.
Hi.
And, hi. And thank you so much for your talk and for Don't Know Mine. And when you mentioned Dan Ellsberg, I thought back to the last week of the Vietnam War when we were in a house in Palo Alto. And somebody, and he was describing him and Tony Russo walking up the court stairs to what they thought was going to be the rest of their lives in prison.
Yes.
And he said, and somebody asked him as he was walking up the stairs, not asking him, but saying, I guess none of it worked. And he said, we sit in this room this last week of the war, and we know that it all worked. It all worked. But we can't see that.
Yeah.
And so I think your encouraging words of keeping at it and looking in the distance. And all we are is accountable for our actions. So I thank you very much.
Thank you for the support and encouragement and all the good work you do. Thank you. So Andrea and Svelo.
Thank you so much for being here. In these last many months, the times I've missed Hozan the most is when I've been grappling with these questions. He was so deep, he had such a deep understanding of politics and history. And
yeah.
So thank you for opening this discussion. I want to share a conversation that I had with him and get your thoughts about it. We were talking not so long before he died about Palestine and Gaza, and I asked him, how is healing possible? And he said to me, it may not be. I didn't see that as nihilistic.
Right.
I actually saw that as a way forward. And I wonder what comes up for you and if you could share your thoughts on that comment.
Oh, yes. Well, there is healing. There is wholeness. We each have some experience of that through Zazen. But in the world at large, you know, there are people who, whatever it is, 30% of the population who are adamantly for Trump, you know, and his shenanigans. And we haven't healed from the Civil War, you know. There's still the racism. So, healing. What healing is not clear. And how we can take hold of the parts that where we can heal, and respect the people who voted for Trump. They have their own fears. They have their own, you know, it's not a matter of us and them. It's just not. We're all in it together. And some people, you know, maybe don't know it or whatever. But so it's not about healing exactly. It's about how we move forward.
That's how I understood. Thank you very much.
And this fellow over here has a...
What?
Peter.
And then there's somebody back there. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you for your talk and for coming. This may be obvious to everyone, but I'll just say it. In addition to helping with despair, I think not knowing is also where we can get the inspiration for how to act.
Oh, good. Yes, yes, yes. Yes. Well, no, say more, please.
Don't know.
Okay. That's it. Yes. We don't know.
Just, in my experience, when I'm at a loss for what to do, the only way to know what to do is to let go of everything I think I know.
Right.
Everything I think I should do or worrying about and just not know. And then somehow you can say miraculously or magically or whatever, but somehow something always comes that says, do this. And it may be very different from anything I might have conceptually come up with, but it's also brilliant in its own way. And I think in applying that to protesting and resisting oppression on a mass scale, that can be the greatest source of success, is to not know and see what arises.
Yes, and to have a kind of balance of, okay, it's pretty terrible, but also, you know, there is wholeness. So thank you. Yes, and there's somebody back there who has their hand up.
Last question.
There's somebody way in the back who had their hand up. I can't really see back there.
Thank you for your talk. You know, one thing Alan talked a lot about, one thing I felt like I learned from him, he talked about always having a long view.
Yes.
I mean, he said it that way, take the long view about people, about institutions, about movements, about actions. And when I talk to some people, a lot of people seem to think that the little things they do don't seem to matter, but I always feel that it's the little things that make up the long view.
Yes.
And that step by step is really important. And that's as true here in our temple as it is outside the gate, I think. You know, all the little things that, the positions that people take, sometimes they feel they're not important, but all of the little positions are important because it makes the temple what it is.
Indeed. Yes, thank you. Long view. Yes, there's a long, you know, we, again, thinking about time and the time since Dogen and Buddha and, you know, the time forward, you know, 800 years from now. So, yes, if we take the long view and act as we see right now, yes, this is what the Bodhisattvas emerging from the earth in the Lotus Sutra are telling us.
Mm.